I want to start with Layli Long Soldier's book, Whereas, in particular a poem called Hey Sapa. In this poem, Layli Long Soldier explores the mistranslation of the Lakota word for mountain as the word hill in the place name for the Black Hills, as a way of pointing out the ways that language and mistranslation were used as part of the American colonial enterprise during Western expansion. Long Soldier creates an etymological critique of the ways map-making and geography and naming were used to create a sense of the American West, we put that in quotes, and this mistranslation diminished the magnitude of the mountain range, and it codified the diminishment into legal documents. Long Soldier explores in the poem the way that this mistranslation stems from language's ability to betray its own physical realities. So in this poem, Hey Sapa, she goes, I've always wanted opaque, the word opaque to mean see-through, transparent, O, open, P, soft, A, airplane or directional flight, K, cut through, translating to that which is or allows air, airy, penetrating light and transparency. So here Long Soldier identifies the word with its opposite, and it has an ominous echo against the backdrop of the treaty negotiations and the betrayals of the spirit and the letter of legal agreements by the U.S. government. So she goes on to say in that same poem, I negotiate instinct when a word of lightful meaning flips under and buries me in the work of blankets. So she's also doing a metaphor of translation as being buried under the work of blankets. And the work of blankets is, I think, a very intentional reference to the smallpox blankets that were weaponized by the United States Army. So language is recognized as a porous thing. The treaties themselves traveled back and forth across agreements previously made, the way the borders of the original North American settlements continue to move in flux with their own needs, mineral, political, and economic throughout their existence, and then the lines of the treaties that fluctuated in line with the mineral, political, and economic needs of the American government. And that's not 19th century, it's like Standing Rock, same thing. Because the land was needed, suddenly the treaty doesn't matter anymore. It further complicates the question of what we call documentary poetics, because what's being documented here is the vexed nature of the land, sound, language, history, and geography of the so-called Indian. So how does the Indian body, quote-unquote, translate itself then? The illusion that the indigenous languages of the American continent themselves are untranslatable is given a lot of cultural currency in the stories of translations associated with them. For example, and they always include some sense of loss or betrayal. For example, think of the Navajo, quote-unquote, Navajo code talkers who worked during the Second World War because their language was supposedly an uncrackable cipher to send messages. Or the famous and valorized figure of the traitor slash betrayer figure, who's usually a woman or a female-bodied person, who always is an assistant or translator for the colonizer. So we have Sacajawea, we have Pocahontas, we have La Malinche. Or the story of the California Aboriginal Ishi, who is apparently the last speaker of his language. So a new generation of indigenous American poets, Layli Long Soldier among them, but including Natalie Diaz, Orlando White, M.L. Smoker, Sherwin Bitsui, and many others, are trying to now create a new lingual reality in which structures and words from indigenous languages are coming into American poetic idiom. And some of these poets, including Sherwin Bitsui, will actually use Diné words in the poem itself, and untranslated words. And not in no glossary to explain the words either. So they are just encountered as a quote-unquote foreignness, but not really actually another layer of language. So it's not a brand new project, of course. Gloria Anzal Dua's revolutionary book, The Borderlands, La Frontera, came out more than 30 years ago. I have a picture of Gloria, and we're just going to put it up because I feel like it. Because she's so wonderful. And in it, Anzal Dua theorizes language and translation as a place of difference. And the border is a place of difference where cultures, languages, physical and political realities intertwine and overlap. It's a place of psychic displacement and more often than not, a place of danger. Perhaps then the current fetishizing of the border as a physical place upon or across which a wall could actually be built is just a sign that the dominant political power structures in America are finally confronting the fact that borders are internal, they're porous, they're unfixed, and that many quote-unquote national places are themselves already transnational.